Good morning. Today's daf in the Darm Chav Zayin. We're in Chav Vav Amud Beis. We're going to be starting about halfway down the Amud Beis with Rav Ada Bar Ava. Okay, we are going to be finishing up yesterday's sugya regarding neder shehuta miksaso huta kulo. What happens when part of the neder is released? Or is there going to be a full release from the entire neder? So that is yesterday's discussion, which we're going to conclude with today. And then for the remainder of today's daf, we're going to be speaking about one topic only, and we're going to be talking about ones by neder. So stay tuned. A lot of basic concepts coming up in the second half of today's daf. We're going to be talking about ones. We're going to be talking about smachta. Okay, but that's coming up later on. In the meantime, however, let's finish up from yesterday. Now, in order to finish up from yesterday, please indulge me for just a couple of minutes as we basically map out from yesterday what exactly were the positions of yesterday's daf. Okay, so admittedly, it's a little bit complicated only simply because there's just so much moving parts and there's so many positions to remember. But I'm going to try to give this nice and easy and nice and organized, and hopefully all of us will walk away with some understanding of our sugya. So we have a machlokas tanaim. We'll start over there. Machlokas tanaim, whether or not when part of the neder is hutar, so whether or not the entire neder is going to be mutar as well. So that is a machlokas in our mishnah, meaning this takes us back to mishnah in yesterday's daf, the Nidrei Shkagos. So we had a machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. So Beis Hillel Shita is that once part of the neder is lifted, the entire neder is lifted as well. In other words, the neder is basically effectively all bundled together, and once part of it's undone, all of it's undone. That's the Shita of Beis Hillel. Now, we're not going to go through the specific examples, not at least in the summary, but that's the Shita of Beis Shammai. That's the Shita of Beis Hillel, and that Shita of Beis Hillel is also in coordination with the Shita of Rabbi Akiva. So it happens to be later in our Masechta, so we're going to go over this Machlokas again. This comes up twice in our Masechta, and we're going to see later on the machlokas between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim, and Rabbi Kiva is going to take that same position of neder shehuta miksaso huta kula. Good. And so that means that Beis Shammai argues on this position, and it also means that the Chachamim who are arguing with Rabbi Kiva also take this position as well. Good. So they have on one side a group of Tanaim, on the other side another group of Tanaim, and on the side of Halacha, meaning the accepted Halacha, of course, is going to go like Beis Hillel and like Rabbi Akiva. The neder shehuta miksaso huta kula. Good. That's step number one. Step number two is the framing of this machlokas. Meaning so that we know we have a machlokas, and now, when does this machlokas apply? So there are two shitas amongst the Amoraim, and just to make it a little more confusing, they basically have the same name. It's Rabba and it's Rava. Now they are Amoraim who are living in the same tkufa. In fact, Rava was a Talmud of Rabba, right, which the Ran notes in terms of trying to figure out what the halacha is, which I'm not going to go through the Ran inside, but one of the complications is that when you have a Rebbe and Talmud arguing with one another, so who do I go with? Do I go with the Rebbe? Do I go with the Talmud? Okay. Typically, of course, you would go with the Rebbe, but that's okay. Anyway, we're not going to try to figure that out today, but it's an important discussion, which we're just simply not going to have in the course of the daf. But meanwhile, just in terms of what the shitas are, so let's start with Rabba, right? We're going to go both in the way in chronology, in terms of history, and we're also going to go in the way the Gemara presented it. So let's start off with Rabba. So Rabba's of the position that in a scenario in which you made the following mistake. You didn't know that Dad was there. And had you known that Dad was there, so you wouldn't have changed your sentence. You would have just simply said chutz me Abba. So in other words, you're not ready to be Mishana Dibor. So under those circumstances, so then kuli alma, according to everybody, so then we do not say neder shehuta miksaso huta kulo. It's only going to be in the circumstance where you're Mishana Dibor. You would have changed your sentence. Meaning, had you known that Dad was there, remember what the neder was, is that there was a group of people who were all gathered around your dates, eating your dates. You lost your mind. You're like, those dates are going to be usher to the entire group. And then you noticed your father was there. You didn't know that at the time, but then you noticed. So now under those circumstances, so, according to Rabba, if I would have changed my sentence, I wouldn't have said, Kulchem Asurim, Chutz Me'Abba. And as we explained yesterday, the reason why you wouldn't have said that is because once you say the words Kulchem Asurim, so for a moment in time, your father thinks that he's part of that group, and you don't want him to ever think that. So you would have changed your sentence altogether. Then, and only then, do we have the Shitas of Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva, the neder shehuta miksaso huta kula. So, according to Rabba, in order to take the position neder shehuta miksaso huta kula is going to be when there were two failures. This is the way I presented it yesterday, and I'll stick with it because it's It's pretty straightforward. There has to be two failures. Number one, there's a failure of your neder, meaning the intention of your neder. You never intended the neder to be on everybody because you didn't know your father was there. So that's failure number one. Failure number two is that you would have changed the formulation of how you said it. There would have been a shinui dibor. You wouldn't have said kulchem asurim. You would have said something else, right? This one's asur and that one's asur. Yeah, but not you, Dad. Okay, fine. So in other words, so then and only then are we going to say neder shehuta miksasa huta kula. That's the sheet of Rabbah. So Rabbah's position takes a very limited position in terms of when are we going to exercise the rule of neder shehuta miksasa huta kula. That's Rabbah. Rabbah reish beis hey. And then the Gemara introduces us to the Shita of Rava. Rava, Reish Beis Aleph, who's the Talmud. So Rava's of the position that is much more expansive. In other words, when do we say Neder Shehuta Miksasa Huta Kulo? When there's just one failure, meaning it's just a failure of Neder. In other words, a failure of intention. But if your sentence is going to be the same, it's still going to be Neder Shehuta Miksasa Huta Kulo. Meaning I still would have said, Kulchem Asurim Chutz Me'aba. We're going to say neder shehuta miksasa huta kulo. And just to review from yesterday, why? In other words, according to Rava, what's the svara? The svara is like this. When I say kulchem asurim, and then I redact my sentence, and I say kulchem asurim chutz me'aba. So when I, in that redacted sentence, what am I focusing on? Am I focusing on the first part of that, which is effectively the same as what I originally said? Or do we focus on the entire statement? This issue of which part of the statement do I focus on, that's a machlokes between Rav Meir and Rav Yossi in the Gemara and Temura, whether or not Adam Nidfas Belashon Rishon, whether the first part of your sentence is always going to be the Iker, and the rest is just simply something we don't focus on, or no, that are we Tfos Kol Halashon, and that's the Shita of Rav Yossi. And so where Rabbi Akiva stands and Beis Hillel stands is in line with Rav Yossi, meaning for Rava to work. And I know already it's at the beginning of the daf, and it's very confusing. But if you're following everything, for Rav Shita to work, so we have to bundle together, is the Shitas of Rabbi Kiva and Beis Hillel together with the Shita of Rabbi Yossi. And so that means to say that when I make my redacted statement, instead of saying Kulchem Asurim, I say Kulchem Asurim, Chutz Me'aba. So now that's a totally new sentence. It's not the same as the previous sentence, and therefore we're going to employ the rule of Neder Shehuta Miksasa Huta Kulo. Okay, Adkan. That takes us now to the end of the Sikkum of yesterday's daf. So you have a Machlokas Tanaim, you have a Machlokas Amoraim, and what did we start with yesterday? The classic. The classic Gemara discussion of, let's see a Braisa, let's see a Mishnah, let's see which of these two Pshatim, Rabbah or Rava, which of these two Pshatim better fit into Mishnayos and Braisos. And that's it. And then the Gemara arrives at a conclusion of this. Truth of the matter is that as far as the first part of today's daf is concerned, it's pretty straightforward. Once you have everything down well, once you know Rabbah, once you know Rava, the rest of the daf today really goes pretty smoothly. Not the rest of the first part. Anyway, Eisvei. So we're going to pick it up right where we left off yesterday. So we're going to be quoting a Braisa. So let's begin. So Eisvei, Rava de Brava la Rava. So we already know who's on the... Who needs to defend himself right now, because this is a challenge directed towards Rava. And that is, Konein Batzal Shani Tom Shabbatzal Rala Lev. So he says, that's it, I'm done with onions. Me and onions are finished. No longer do we have any relationship anymore. I'm not eating onions. In fact, I'm going to be making a neder that all onions in the world are going to be asur to me. And I'm of the firm belief that onions are really bad for you. I spoke to my cardiologist and he told me that onions are no good for me. Okay. It's funny, I thought the cardiologist was just about to walk in.
Yeah.
Okay. Amru lo v'halo, kufri yafel alev. And then they said to him, wait, one second. Don't lump all onions together. In other words, of course there's kufri. Remember kufri? That's good for you. Kufri is a variety of onion, a particular variety of onion. Okay, in other words, keep in mind, by the way, that whenever the Gemara extends medical advice, so we are always under advisement not to follow the medical advice of the Gemara. So as far as the points regarding whether onions are good or bad for you and whether the cardiologist would recommend them or not, so as far as things like that, you speak to your cardiologist, okay? So, but meanwhile, from the Gemara's perspective, there's a variety of onion that's good for you. It's called kufri. So then now the Gemara says like this, huter b'kufri, v'lo b'kufri b'vad, huter ala b'chola b'tzalim. So part of the onion family now is mutter. It's now released from your neder. And you know the rule, when part of it's released, all of it's released. So Maisahaya Vita Rabbi Meir Bechola Betzalim. So in fact, this in fact happened. Somebody made a neder, he was anti-onion. Anti-onion. So he made a neder, and he was released from the kofri, and he was then released from everything. Maisa Shahaya, Rabbi Meir did it. Now, my love to Amar. So again now, why do we say neder shehuta miksasa huta kulo? Meaning, what would have been his redacted statement? New Rava, let's hear what his redacted statement, what it sounded like. So isn't it going to be that if I would have known that Kufri was good for you, I would have redacted my sentence? Then and only then do we say that Neder Shehuta Miksasa Huta Kulo. And remember, according to Rava, you don't need a redacted sentence. Meaning, even if it's effectively the same sentence with an addendum, that's enough. So the Gemara says, "Lo ba'omer ila yisi yodeh shakufri yafel alev hayisi omer batzal ploni uploni asurim v'kufri muter." Rabbi Meir libet the Rabbi Kiva, v'alibet the Rabbanan, and what Rava will tell you is that no, that really what happened over here is that there really would have been a redacted sentence altogether. In other words, there would have been a shinui hadibor, and over here, Rabbi Meir is just simply saying, "I want to construct a scenario in which everyone would subscribe to it," meaning it would be both Rabbi Akiva and it would be the Chachamim as well. Remember, in the case of a redacted sentence, according to Rava, everybody would say that Neder Shehuta Miksasa Huta Kulo. Fine. Eisvei Ravina LaRava. One more time, Rava's on the hot seat. And Rabbi Nasan Amar, Yesh Neder Shemiksasa Motero Miksasa Aser. Ketzad. Neder Min HaKalkala. So what you had over here is a basket full of figs. And the person's looking at that basket full of figs. And what is he articulate? I'm sorry, Vahayuba ben Oshuach. So, and he made a neder against the whole basket. Meaning, my doctor told me no figs. That's it. And I'm enticed. I'm tempted. I'm going to make a neder against the entire basket. And then lo and behold, what he discovered was that in that basket of figs, he had ben Oshuach. Okay, ben Oshuach comes up numerous times throughout the Gemara, right? It's there in the sixth parak of brachos. The Gemara speaks about it over there in terms of which bracha you make over ben Oshuach. There's another Gemara in Avodah Zarah that comes to my mind. Anyway, it's a popular fruit. What is it? I don't know. Of course, I don't know. So probably a white fig, right? I bet you that if he translates it, he probably could describe it as a white fig. Okay, whatever. Okay, fine. Okay, whatever. Okay, good. It's a good fig. Okay, we'll just call it the good fig. So anyway, so the so v'hayu ba b'no shuach v'amri li ha'yisi yodea. So originally he said, fine. So you know what? In other words, because he didn't know that there was B'no Shuach there, and had he known, he of course wouldn't have incorporated B'no Shuach in his neder. So the original position that was articulated was, you know what? The rest of the basket maintains Asr, and the B'no Shuach is Mutter. Ad Sheba, everyone knows where we're going. Ad Sheba, Rabbi Akiva, V'limei Neder Shuta Miksasa Huta Kulo. Good. And Rabbi Akiva comes along and he instructs and he educates and he tells all of us, no, the rule is that once part of the neder is lifted, the entire neder is lifted. Good. That part's easy. That part we knew. What we're litigating again is this going to be more in line with Rabba or is this more in line with Rava? Well, we already know where the Gemara is at least heading right now. The Gemara thinks that this is a slam dunk kasha on Rava. So my love, Damer Ilisi Odesh Ben Oshuach Besoch Hayisi Omer Teinim Shcharos Ulevenos Asuros Ben Oshuach Mutaros. So presumably what he would have done is he would have changed his sentence altogether. There would have been a Shinui Hadibor, and remember, according to Rava, you don't need that. According to Rava, even an amended statement where all there is just simply an addendum at the end, that's enough to create Neder Shehuta Miksasa Huta Kulo. So, v'Rabbi Kiva, he upligi Rabbanan. So, isn't that the case where there would have been a redacted sentence? And if there was a redacted sentence, so then Rabbi Kiva says, yeah, under those circumstances, we're going to lift the entire neder. But that's all good if you're working with Rabba's understanding of Rabbi Akiva. Rava, according to you, you don't need a redacted sentence. So the Gemara says, law ba'omer yelisi yodeh shebenoshuach besocha yisi omer kol kakal asur v'noshuach mutaris. So the Gemara says, okay, and so Rav, in defense of himself, would say, no, In other words, with the clarification of what he would have said is, I just want to make an addendum. In other words, my sentence remains the same. The basket is Aser, with notable exception to Beno Shuach. That's what he would have said. And so once again, Rava defends himself. The defense of Rava, it's the same move every time. Meaning we're trying to figure out what would have been the redacted sentence had he known. And so now Rava will just simply say every time, the redacted sentence is, I'm not ready to change anything. I would have said the same exact thing, just with an addendum of, you know, but not Beno Shuach, of course. Yeah. It's fair to wonder. Meaning, it's the same defense. So, mantan lahadatan rabbanan. Okay, so the Gemara says, okay, now, let's do this one more time. Meaning, so, this is a great exercise of the Gemara right now, because now you know the Shitas Rebbe, Kivan the Chachamim. And you know the Pshat of Rabba, and you know the Pshat of Rava. So now that you get all that down, so let's do the following. Let's learn a braisa together, and let's identify who's talking. Okay, good. It's a great workbook exercise. I know. I think like school, but you know, for good reason. Okay. So Tan Rabbanan, we learned in a braisa. So let's say you make a neder for five people. In other words, what you do in your mind is you group five people together. You know those five, right? I don't want anything to do with those five. They're the worst. Okay, good. And I make a neder against them. And then Hutter Lechad Mehem, and then you learn that one of them isn't so bad. Okay, so fine. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to release myself from one of the five. So Hutcher Kulan, Chutz Mehechad Mehem. I'm sorry. So Hutcher Kulan. So when you bundle the five together and you release from one, you release from all five. However, Chutz Mehechad Mehem. But let's say what I did is that in my redacted sentence I said Chutz Mehechad Mehem. So Humutter Vehina Surin. So the Gemara says, fine. So then he's going to be Mutter and they're going to be Aser. So now what we've just done is that in the redacted sentence, if I'm not really changing anything, all I'm doing is adding an addendum at the end. So then what does that do? Is that it only releases me from the one, but not from all four, the other four. Okay, good. Who's talking right now? Good. That's the Braisa. So who's talking? So it really depends who you ask. Depends if you're asking Rabba or it depends if you're asking Rava. Gemara says exactly that. Ila Rabba Reisha Rabbi Akiva v'Seifa Divrei HaKol. So if you're asking Rabba, so the beginning is Rabbi Akiva and the Seifa is Divrei HaKol. Because in the Seifa, so what did you do? You didn't change. You just simply amended. You addended. That's all you did in the Seifa. Oh, so according to Rabba, so if all you're doing is just adding an addendum and you're not changing, so what was Rabba's position? According to everybody, the entire Nedra is not lifted. Good. So Rabba will tell you that the end of the braisa is going according to everybody. And then, yes, of course, it's a little bit strange that we have a braisa where basically we're shifting from Rabbi Akiva to Divrei HaKol. That's a little bit strange, but okay, that's if you're Rabba. And if you're Rabba, it's just a question of what your amended statement is going to be. And it's no different. And Ila Rabba, Sefer Rabban, Vereisha Divrei HaKol. And if you're Rabba, so then the Sefer would be the Shita of the Chachamim, because remember, according to Rabba, when you are even if you're not changing your original sentence, even if all you're doing is just adding an addendum, according to Rabbi Akiva, we're employing the rule of neder shehuter miksaso huter kulo. So when you get to the seifa of that braisa and you didn't change your sentence, Rabbi Akiva would shrug his shoulders and he would tell you, "I don't care. You didn't change your sentence. Did you add on? You did. You said chutz. Okay, then we're still gonna say neder shehuter miksaso huter kulo. So that means to say that the end of the braisa can only be going like the chachamim and not like Rabbi Akiva, and then the ratio would be divrei HaKol. Okay, good, fine, good. So if you successfully navigated who the braisa is going like, both according to Rabbi and according to Rava, so then good. So you get a check for both in terms of understanding. Then you understood the various shitas of Rabbi and Rava in their understandings of the machlokas tanaim. Okay. By the way, just as we conclude and we wrap up our first part of today's daf, so just as a note, everything I did both yesterday and today in terms of the presentation, the sugya, was all going according to the Ran. Meaning, the Ran is not the only way that explains this Gemara. There are other ways to explain this Gemara. So that means to say that the Gemara is more complicated than the way I presented it. Okay, wonderful. That's fantastic. But at least for today, and yesterday, so I presented it like the Ran, and for good reason. Meaning, this is Daf Yomi, and so just a basic streamlined approach to how to understand our Gemara. Okay, as you can see, the Ran writes a lot over here, and a lot of what he discusses, which we're not going to go through inside, is who does the halacha fall like? meaning that we have the Machlokes Tanaim, that part's easy, meaning you have Beisham and Beisolo, we're going to go like Beisolo. And on top of that, Rabbi Akiva is coordinated and works together with the Shita of Beisolo. So that part's easy. But the Machlokes Amoraim within the Machlokes Tanaim, so who do we follow like? So that part's not easy, meaning you have Rabba and you have Rava. And so which one do we follow? And there are no rules in terms of which one we follow. And it's,
wasn't Rava
a student of Rabba?
Right.
So correct.
He should be...
Correct. So good. That the Ran discusses. So the Ran discusses all that, and so there are a lot of competing values in terms of who the halacha follows like. Anyway, but the Ran, as we saw, unlike Rashi, by the way, just a good contrast between what Rashi typically does and what the Ran does. And that is Rashi just simply wants to hold our hand as we walk through the Gemara and tell us what the pshat of the Gemara is. Right? The Rashi is not going to ever arrive at a conclusion of who do we follow like. Almost never. Okay? On rare occasion, I'm thinking, Rashi does so, but almost never. Rashi just simply wants to say pshat. Whereas the Ran, we've seen time and again throughout this Masechta, as I'm leaning heavily on the Ran for just a basic explanation of Gemara, the Ran all the time tells us, and oh, by the way, after we finish, so then this is a halacha. Meaning the Ran not only gives pshat in the Gemara, but he also talks about what the conclusion is, what the bottom line is in terms of the halacha. It's a totally different style. Okay, we are on Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, and we're halfway down, and we're at the Mishnah, and now we're almost done with the Perek. Meaning, what have we done so far? So we have said that there are four types of Nedarim where articulation of the Neder is not a Neder. And it's not a failure of articulation, meaning you made a perfectly good Neder. So, but what you did is that you simply did not have intention to make a Neder. And so therefore, in four categories, the Neder is simply not going to be a Neder. So you remember the beginning of the parak. So what are the four categories? They are Nidrei Zeruzin, motivational Nedarim. I'm just getting you to move you off your position, right? Clearly in negotiation, it happens all the time. That's what the Mishnah told us. And even though now I'm trying to get you to move off your number and I make a neder to do so, I'm just using the neder as leverage. I don't really mean a neder. That's category number one. Category number two is Nidrei Havai. Nidrei Havai is either hyperbole or just simply nonsense. And everybody knows it's nonsense, right? I made such a nonsensical sentence that the snake that I saw is like the beam of an olive press. Okay, I don't understand this nonsense, but you know. But anyway, that's Nidrei Havai, also not intended to be a neder. Then we had Nidrei Shkagos. Nidrei Shkagos is where a mistake was made. We just covered that in yesterday's daf and the day before. Let's just go back to yesterday. And finally, Nidrei Onsin. So Nidrei Onsin is another example where I made a neder, and the neder is not going to be binding. Okay, why not? Good. That's where we start with that right now. We're on Chav Zayin Amud Aleph. We are at the Mishnah, and here we are now, final neder of the four categories. So Nidrei Onsin, Hedir Chavesh Yochel Etzal, V'halo V'chalohu, Oshe Chalabano, Sheikva Nahar, Arei Eilu Nidrei Onsin. And so what happens is that I call him with an excuse. So I got invited to come over, and the one who invited me, so he made a neder that if I don't come over and don't eat by him, so then, I'm going to be usher to his food. He's going to be usher to his food. Whatever the neder was. So a neder is attached to me coming. And then what I did is I text him and I tell him, look, I'm really sorry. I'm sick, or I'm really sorry. My kid's sick. Sorry, we can't come over. But in other words, I really would love to. It's just onus. In other words, circumstances that are beyond my control. I'm sure you understand. Or right now, the river is not allowing me to pass. Okay. Whatever excuse that you give, so that now will render the neder null and void. It will disqualify the neder. So over here, what's the svara? So the svara is, and we'll see this, I'll show you a couple times in the Ran. Alternatively, I'll just tell you the Ran says it, and you'll have to trust me. All right, I had my first real years of learning in YU, I had an unbelievable Rebbe, so he had the greatest line. It's so many years later, and I still remember it. He said that in Akash Baruch Hu, you have Amuna. He says, in your Rebbeim, you have no Amuna. In other words, the Rebbe tells you something, he says, you look it up. It was fantastic. Anyway, so, but the Ran later on, we'll say it clearly. What's the Svara over here? So the, did I say his name? It was Rav Braunschweigel? Anyway, so what's the Svara over here? So the Svara is that the, according to the Ran, that when I make a neder, so I didn't include Onsen. meaning ones was not within the purview of my neder, meaning that I only meant that the neder would be chal under normal circumstances. Once we have anything that extenuates, and just even though, by the way, in other words, your kid got sick, it's not the best excuse in the world. Okay, but still, in other words, my neder, when I made it, did not incorporate an extenuating circumstances. So, as a result of that, if you have a legitimate excuse, even if it's not the best, but you have a legitimate excuse, why it didn't come, so that will render the neder null and void. Okay, good. So that is, now we're in the category of nidrei onsin, and so let's discuss the following. How will gavra, da'advis zachvasa beveidina va'amar. Okay, so now, for the rest of today's daf, we're effectively going to be discussing the following case. Okay. Person had a court case, it's a civil case, and he had proofs that he was owed money. And va'amar. And here's his declaration. And he says, sorry. So va'amar. Ilo asinu atal sinyama livatlan hanizachvase. So he says, look, the court, by the way, is, I'm giving a little more narration, I'm giving a little more drama over here. The court's fed up with him. Totally fed up with him. In other words, he's been difficult to pin down, difficult to come to court. And finally, to assure the court that he's real and that he's a serious person. So he says the following. I'm going to give myself the following deadline. 30 days. I'm going to come within 30 days. And if I don't come within 30 days, any proof that I have, I've got many good proofs that I owe the money. Any proof that I have will become null and void. I'll disqualify my own proofs if I don't come within 30 days. Okay. That's his bold claim. Again, he's doing so just to give assurances that he's a serious person and he's going to come. And isness. And you know what happened. So, right, we're on day 30 and he's calling up the court and he's telling the court, look, I'm really sorry. I was supposed to come today. I have a ticket. I'm flying. I don't want to say which airline, Spirit Airline. And the... And meanwhile, so here we are, and I can't make it, right? But it's an ones. In other words, I want to come today. So, isness. So lo asa, I'm Rav Huna bato zachvase. So now what happens is that Rav Huna heard him, and Rav Huna said, "Okay, that's a wonderful excuse, and all your proofs are now going to be disqualified." In other words, I don't care. Rav Huna said, I don't care about your excuses. You said you weren't going to come within 30 days. You told us, you made a firm commitment that if you don't come within 30 days, all your proofs are going to be rendered null and void. Oh, okay. So so that's it. And excuses, I'm not interested. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to start discussing this psak of Rav Huna. So Amalei Rava Anusuv Anus Rachman Apache. So the simple counter argument is, you know, there's something called ones, meaning we believe in ones, circumstances that are beyond your control. So the Gemara says we believe in that. Let's start the discussion off in the following. So first of all, the most classic case of ones, the one recorded in the Torah, is where a woman is violated, and she's a married woman, and now she has relations with another man, but she was forced to do so. We all know the halacha is very clear. You don't put her to death. She's an anusa. In fact, the very definition of anusa is typically associated with a woman who's being violated. So what do you mean you're not ready to hear a case of ones? We know ones is a legitimate petura. Now v'chitem ketala shanei v'hatana nidreon sinidir chavish yocholatzlava v'chala hu oshachala benoshikvo nahare elu nidreon sin. And now what I already anticipate your counter argument. Meaning you're telling me that it's going to be just simply a p'tur of onish. It's only just to get to block punishment, but it's not a legitimate excuse. To which the Gemara says, no, it really is a legitimate excuse. I submit to you our Mishnah, meaning our Mishnah, which is not there's no death penalty. It's just a question of whether neder is chal or neder is not chal. And what do we learn in our Mishnah? An ones is an excuse. And oh, by the way, in our Mishnah, it's not even the greatest ones. Meaning, I got sick, my kid got sick. Meaning, and still, the neder's not going to be chal. So Rav Huna, how can you ignore his excuse of ones, when meanwhile, I'm showing you a Mishnah in the Darim, meaning our Mishnah. So Ula Rav Mishnah Mehadetnan. So the Gemara now is basically, we're between two Amoraim. We have Rav Huna, who seems not to be moved by the excuse of Ones. We have Rava, who's very moved by it. And oh, by the way, Rava has got great support. It's our Mishnah. So we are right now between two Amoraim, and now the Gemara is going to note, Rava, I have a couple of Mishnayos to show you. What are you going to say about the following Mishnayos? Number one. So Mehadinam, we have a Mishnah, Rezikitech Machshavim Lo Bat Mikana Shnemasar Chodesh, Umeis Betzoch Shnemasar Chodesh. So a man gives a get to his wife, and he puts in the following condition. The get's going to be good if I don't come back within 12 months. And so now he doesn't come back within 12 months, but for a good reason. Rachmanis, he died. Okay. Which, that's a pretty good ones. Okay. So the, and what's the halacha reza get? So, amai v'haminis isneis. So the get is going to be considered valid. And the Gemara says, I don't understand. Isn't that a case of ones? And shouldn't it render the get now not a get? Meaning, yes, it's true, the condition wasn't fulfilled, but the condition wasn't fulfilled volitionally. The condition wasn't fulfilled simply because, forgive me for being so blunt, he dropped dead. And so, isn't that an example of ones? And yet, Rava, according to you, ones is substantial. Over there, we seem to be ignoring ones. So, Amri Damashani Asim, the Gemara says, yeah, I know, but that case is different. And that is the Avayada Damis. Min la alter have gamar v'yayv gita. So the Gemara says no. That's not a good example because consider the following. Okay, what was he trying to do by giving her a get, making it conditional upon his return? So as the Ron explains over here, and we've gone over this numerous times throughout Shas, what he wants to do is he does not want to make his wife a widow. Right. He wants to avoid his wife being a widow. Why? Because he knows his brother, and more importantly, she knows his brother. And she and the mitzvah of Yibam over here is not exciting her and doesn't excite him. So rather than being a widow, he would much rather have her be a divorcee. Oh, okay, fine. So he's going away and he knows that there's a chance he's not going to come back. So in other words, so in order to avoid any issues, so he's going to make it now conditional to if I don't come back within 12 months. Included in that, in other words, if he knew he was going to die, he for sure would have made the get effective immediately. Meaning that's included in the condition of if I don't return, included in that is if I die as well. Because basically what he wanted to do is save his wife from being a widow and now being locked into the mitzvah of Yibum with his brother who nobody's excited about. Good. So that's an exceptional case that does not play a role in our discussion. So the Gemara says fine. Good. Rava, excellent job sidestepping that Mishnah. How about the following? Mishnah ba'ahuda amar lo yilo asino mikan natasin yom la'ave gita. So aso paska ba'abra amar lo chazed asai. Chazed asai. Okay, so what happened is the following, and all this should sound familiar, by the way. You open up the beginning of the Gemara Ksuvos, and the same discussion we're having over here is the same discussion we had in the beginning of Ksuvos as well. So a man said to his wife, I'm giving you a get, and it's going to be effective if I don't come back within 30 days from now. And now what happens is on day 30, much like I described earlier this morning, so on day 30, what happens is that he calls her and he says, look, I'm really ready to come. I know I'm being a little anachronistic. So he calls and he says, look, I'm ready to come. It's just right now, the ferry's not working today, right? The plane's not working today. So in other words, he has what is called an excuse, ones. Circumstances that were beyond his control. So Amalu Chazud Asai, and he's screaming, right? I have him on the phone. But over here in the Gemara, he's on the other side of the river. And he says, look, I really want to come. The ferry's not operating today. It's not my fault. So Avamr Shmuel Oshme Masya. So and Shmuel just simply sits there and looks at him and he says, look, you know what? You said you were gonna come within 30 days, you didn't come within 30 days. That's it. It's over. The get is effective. Ones, Shmuel says, I'm not interested in hearing your excuses. Okay, so now Rava, I know you think excuses are legitimate. What do you do with the psak of Shmuel? Now, admittedly, it's not a Mishnah, but still, Shmuel over here doesn't seem like anyone's arguing. Shmuel's of the position that the excuse is simply not accepted. Amai v'haminis anes ha-gemar asks exactly this question. So Dilma Unsa Demigle Shani. So the Gemara says, yeah, there's Ones and then there's Ones. The Gemara describes this as Unis Demigle, a revealed Ones. In other words, I'm just using our examples in our lifetime. Do planes get delayed? unfortunately, all too often. So in other words, if you really wanted to be there at a certain point in time, so should you have anticipated that? 100%. You should have anticipated that. So in other words, when something is an onus that you knew was going to happen, ferries don't operate every day, planes don't work all the time, certainly not per your schedule. So under those circumstances, that's unis de migle, that's different. So the Gemara says, umaabra migle onse, and the ferry, that falls under this category of migle unse, an onus that you should have expected and you should have anticipated. Okay. So far, so good. We're almost done. So where do we stand right now? So this guy comes in and he's got a civil case, and I'm just taking us back to the beginning of the discussion. So he had a civil case and he said that if I don't come within 30 days, so all my proofs will be rendered totally ineffective. I will disqualify my own proofs if I don't come within 30 days. Good. That was his commitment. And what happened was is that he didn't come, but he called him with an excuse. So Rav Huna says, sorry. Not interested in your excuses, and Rav Huna disqualified all of his evidence because he didn't keep to his word. Good, that was Rav Huna. Rava is trying to understand this because Rava knows that excuses are in fact valid. How do I know that? Our Mishnah here in Nedarim, today's daf, Nedarim Chav Zayin, where we have an excuse and that will disqualify the neder because it's an onis. It's something that he didn't see. He didn't anticipate, and therefore it's an onus. And so far, what we've been doing right now, up until this point in time, we know Rav Huna invalidated his proofs. Onus, Rav Huna just shrugs his shoulder, I don't care. And meanwhile, what we've also seen is Rava. Rava says onus is a real deal. Our Mishnah tells us that onus is a real deal. Onus is, in fact, something which is excusable. A couple places where we see onus is not validated, that's different. The case of Gittin is different. The second case of Get by Shmuel is different. That's onus de migle. Fine. But Rava basically believes in onus. So now the Gemara turns back to Rav Huna. Ula Rav Huna michte. Asmachte hi asmachte lo kanya. So the Gemara says, okay. So now basically on the front of onus, so we went back and forth. We know where Rava stands. We know where Rav Huna stands. Okay. Can we just discuss one more point in the Gemara? And that is, why not, what about the issue of asmachta? Okay. And what is the issue of asmachta? Asmachta is basically where I make a commitment based on a future event. You know what we generally call that? It's called gambling. Okay. In other words, I'm not talking specifically about casino gambling, but that's certainly included in this discussion. But basically, when I make a commitment, but based on something that will happen in the future, so that falls under the category of asmachta. And so is that a kinyan or is that not a kinyan? And I'm not talking about when we discover the results, meaning if we discover the results and they either work or don't work in our favor, but at the time, however, when I'm making a commitment based on a future event, is that commitment going to be binding? Yes or no? So what do we know throughout Shas? It's a machlokas. It's a major machlokas amongst the Amoraim. It's probably a machlokas amongst Tanaim as well. Right, the Gemara in Sanhedrin in the third perek has this discussion straight out as it relates to gambling. But meanwhile, over here, so we're discussing it in a non-gambling circumstance, but still, it's effectively the same discussion. So what is this person ready to do? Disqualify his proofs. He's got legitimate proofs, but he's looking to disqualify them based on something that's going to happen in the future. It falls under the category of asmachta. So new, where do we stand on asmachta? That's the Gemara's discussion. And according to Rav Huna, asmachta is not kohen. And another round also points out over here that Rav Huna is a little bit fickle on this issue. You'll find other gemaras where Rav Huna says asmachta is kohen. The rounds of the position that Rav Huna basically had a change of mind. The round thinks that this is Rav Huna's final position, that asmachta is not kohen. Okay. So the gemara says, shani hacha de mitfas an zechusan. So the gemara says, okay, but it's different over here. Why? Because what did Rav Huna do? He handed over the documents to the Beis Din. So in other words, so that firmed up his commitment. Meaning, what's the problem with asmachta? The problem with asmachta is that I don't know if it's binding because I don't know if you're confident. Right? In other words, gambling is such a wonderful example. Now, by the way, I say it's a wonderful example. There are many different types of gambling. There's gambling that's all luck-based, and there's gambling that there's a little bit of skill involved. So it's hard to put all gambling in the same discussion. But just for now, just to illustrate, when it comes to gambling, so do I know the results? Of course not. And meanwhile, I put the money in, okay, and I lose. In other words, right, every gambler is going to tell you, I wish I didn't do that. No one enjoys losing their money. So in other words, was he firm in his commitment when he put the money down? That's the question of asmachta. That's the question of whether asmachta is kohen or not. But over here, what the Gemara now is trying to advance is that because he handed over all the documents to the court, so even though he doesn't know whether or not he's going to make it there 30 days from now or not, but because he handed it over, so this is like a, if you will, a super asmachta. Okay? It's asmachta, but more binding because he handed the documents over. So the Gemara says, really, that's going to make a difference. Vehecha the mitzvahs and lava smachta hi vatanan mishapar mitzvahs chovo hishash shtar of amra im enani nostin lo mikan shoshim yom tein lo shtaro higia zman velo nasan Rabbi Yossi omer yitain and Rabbi Yehuda omer lo yitain. Okay, so the following occurred. Okay, so Phil, I owe you $100. Good. And you're holding a note against me. And now, What happens is that I started making payments towards my note. I gave you $50. So Phil, you're right. You're so patient with me. But after a while, though, okay, let's go. Right, can you pay off the balance of my note? And so now I'm a little bit stuck right now, and I'm trying to stall for time. Here's what I'll do. So Phil, I'm going to tell you that I'm going to hand over the note. No, I'm sorry. You're holding the note. You're going to hand over the note to Alex. Okay, let Alex hold the note for, I don't know, let's say a month. You're good? You're good with a month? And what's going to happen is the following. I will pay you basically we'll put the note in escrow. I will pay you the balance by the end of these 30 days. And if I don't, so here's what I'm going to agree to right now. You'll take the note back from Alex, and you can demand from me the full balance, the full loan amount, even though I already paid some of it.
What would a transfer note in Alex accomplish?
I'm just, what? Wait, well, hold on.
What was the transfer note to Alex accomplish?
I just want the note out of Phil's hands.
He wants to make sure he can't collect.
Right, correct. Let me.
No, but Alex.
No. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, in other words, me paying more.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So fine. So Alan's asking an excellent question, and that is that I'm paying more than the loan amount. So let's, instead of, and I know this is semantics, by the way, and I know this may not satisfy you, but instead of calling it ribbis, let's call it a penalty. If that helps. Okay, it's not, I understand, it's not the best answer, but let's call it a penalty. I'll penalize myself now for being delinquent in my payment. Okay, it's not a great answer, but right now it'll work. So, okay, whatever the case is. Okay, but the point is now, is that is such a commitment going to be binding? And once again, here we are again in the world of asmachta, meaning I don't know what's going to be happening at the end of 30 days. I'd like to think I'm going to pay it back, but I don't know. And in such a scenario, the note was handed over. So the Gemara says, and one more important detail, meaning it's a machlokas tanayim, and ve'amar av nachman amar av abaravu amar av ein alach karev yosi, da'amar asmachta kanya. And oh, by the way, in other words, the halach is not like Rav Yosi. Meaning, this is not going to be binding, even though the note was handed over. So Shani Hachad Amar Levat Lan Zich Vasei. So the Gemara says, okay, I hear you. But this case is different over here because he said Levat Lan Zich Vasei, meaning that he himself made the declaration that I'm handing you all my documents and all my proofs, and I'm telling you that all of it should be rendered invalid. And it takes a while, and I'm still not there yet. It takes a while to understand now the difference between that case over there, meaning this is our case for today, and meanwhile the case of the mashlish shtar, where you handed the note over to somebody else. It's not comparable, says the Gemara. Why isn't it perfectly comparable? I'm still working on it, meaning I'm still trying to understand myself. V'hilchasa, the Gemara says, okay. And as long as we're on the topic of asmachta, the Gemara says, let's come up to some resolutions on asmachta. Number one, ve'ochas asmachta kanya. So the Gemara says that generally speaking, asmachta does work. Okay, and not to be taken as a halachic statement, because I'm not saying it as a halachic statement. But right now, what the Gemara sounds like is that if you want to gamble, Okay. In other words, certainly not recommended, but in other words, is it binding? So it sounds like from the Gemara's conclusion today, yeah, asmachta kanya, meaning that if I give money based on a future event, it's enough of a kinyan. It's a kinyan. It works. And wait just a second. Hu delo anis, and the Gemara says, and that's only if he's doing so willingly. And vehu dekanamine, and also what you have to do is that you have to make a kinyan, meaning at the time when you're making the commitment, you have to do some form of kinyan to show that you're a serious person, right? To simply say, and again, everything I'm saying is not halachically in the conclusive, meaning this is not a shir in halacha. I'm just explaining the Gemara using examples, okay? So so let's say, right, $10 if you make that shot, right? That's a non-binding statement. We didn't ratify it using any of the methods of kinyan. So the Gemara says there has to be a kinyan and bebeis din chashuv, and it has to be done in a significant beis din, meaning a kinyan by itself, even that in of itself is not enough. It has to be done in front of three significant people, meaning in order to show that you're a serious person making a serious commitment right now, you have to do a kinyan. You have to do so in front of a beis din. Okay. Again, there is a lot to discuss regarding the halacha, but that's not why we're here. I mean, eventually, ultimately, you know, that's where we need to be. But in terms of asmachta, the Gemara seems to conclude asmachta is in fact binding. The Gemara throws in a bunch of provisions in terms of when it's going to be binding. But the Gemara seems to side on the position that asmachta is in fact going to be a kinyan.
Is asmachta an admission or
a
denial of the loan?
No. It's a commitment you're making now based on a future event.
But you're not denying it or admitting it.
No. Asmachta is, I'm saying it really well. Okay. Usually I'm not this confident. So asmachta is a commitment I'm making now based on a future event. And whether or not it's binding. That's the question of asmachta. That's it? Okay, good. Well, yeah, so, right? The sun going down is pretty predictable. Okay, fine. Fair. Okay, let's quickly wrap up. That's today's daf. Let's wrap it up. Okay, so what do we do today? The first part of today is that we finished up our discussion regarding what is considered a case of huter miksasa huter kulo. Part of the neder is lifted. What is it? What is that going to do to the balance of the neder? It's going to lift the balance of the neder. That's the shita beisilo, and that is the shita Rabbi Akiva. And what we did again today, part two of yesterday's daf, is that we went through the various amaraim of Rabba and Rava. Let's say better, Rabba and Rava, in terms of their understandings of Rabbi Akiva. They don't have the same understanding. They have different understandings. And which one works out better? The answer is they both work. In other words, they don't agree in terms of when we say Huter Miksasa Huter Kulo. But what comes out now is that both are defensible positions. Mm-hmm. And then the Gemara ends off and the Ran went on to discuss and do the Ran inside in terms of which one should we follow. Should we follow Rabba or should we follow Rava? Good. That was part number one. Part number two of today's daf is a case of Ones, where what happens is that if I make a neder and then an ones prevents me from fulfilling the neder, so what do we say regarding the ones? It is a legitimate pitur. It renders the neder invalid. That part is clear. And then for the rest of today, what we deliberated over is over the following case where a guy comes into the courtroom and after a number of times of delaying and stalling, he finally says that if I don't come within 30 days, all the documents that I already handed over to you should be rendered invalid. As just a way of trying to placate and pacify. I'm going to be there. You know I'm going to be there. And then what happens when he doesn't come in 30 days? So Rav Huna said, good. He rendered all of his documents invalid. They're all invalid. He's arguing ones. And so that was the good part of today's daf. Meaning whether or not his excuse of ones is in fact going to be a legitimate excuse, it turned out to be a machlokes between Rav Huna and Rava. And then side discussion, which is also an incredibly important discussion, is what about asmachta? Meaning that he's making a commitment now based on a future event. So what do we say regarding asmachta? So that, the Gemara says, also is another machlokas that one can also needs to clarify.